1983, I was the first to expose the existence of a sinister and deadly institution known to few people outside of intelligence. My work was entitled Tavistock Institute, Britain's Control of United States Policy. It fell like a bombshell on the conspirators, because up until my expose, this, the premier brainwashing institution in the world, had enjoyed almost total anonymity. The political forces and secret societies opposing the Republican ideals of the United States were angry and disturbed to discover that I had indeed penetrated their secret existence, and even more so when they found out that I also had possession of one of their, quote, training, unquote, manuals. Naturally, I had to pay a very high price for my disclosures, and I'm still paying that price. It has been hard and difficult in terms of security and finances, but in my struggle to bring the truth to the American people, I have encountered great difficulties many times before, but that has not stopped me from carrying on with my work. And let me say here that most of my difficulties have arisen as a result of the activities of so-called right-wing Christians, a group of whom are plants by the United States government and who set their face against me and attempted to destroy me and often have convulsions which result in further attacks on me whenever they feel I might be a threat to them. My expose of Tavistock is regarded by my peers in the intelligence world as a significant contribution to the spread of truth in the United States of America. After my work was published in 1983, scores of writers came out with thinly disguised versions of my report, without, of course, giving me the slightest credit. At least one such writer of many books, who has a strong following in right-wing circles, has done this repeatedly, and a friend of his down in Louisiana consistently copies and distributes my work. No matter, what is more important is that the truth should reach as many people as possible. Much of what I reported in my 1983 work on the Tavistock Institute has since been confirmed by events and reports which appeared in such prestigious journals as Barron's, which in 1988 published what it called, and I quote, a scoop, unquote. The story was about the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS, which I had named in 1983 and written about, along with 22 other sinister organizations, which I did not have time then to go into, but which to this day have not been mentioned by the press, news reporters, or any of our newsletters, or the author who is so popular with the right wing. That scoop was 5 years after my original expose of the Institute for Policy Studies. It is the firm opinion of my peers that no one who is interested in the future of this great country can afford to ignore the manner in which the Tavistock Institute has whipsawed America and manipulated its people, most of whom, the majority of whom, live in total ignorance of what is taking place. For those who did not get the 1983 work, The Tavistock Institute, it is available again from World in Review, WIR, 2533 North Carson Street, Carson City, Nevada, 89706, or you can phone 1-800-942-0821 and order a copy. The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, to give it its full title, is situated in London and in addition on the grounds of Sussex University, where most of the research facilities are located. It remains as important today as it was when I first revealed its existence, and one of the odd things that has happened to me is that the same group that I was talking about earlier often accuse me of having actually worked for the Tavistock Institute, because of my association with Sussex University, and I can tell you there's absolutely no basis in fact for these allegations, which are just one of the many attempts to destroy my credibility. Some of the most recent activities of Tavistock have had and are having a profound effect upon our lives in this great nation of America, as we shall see. But briefly, some of the stepped-up activities have been to attack Christianity, to promote abortion, to promote the drug trade, and to attack that which is the most vulnerable, our traditional family unit. And they've done this by promoting sodomy and lesbianism. They've also intruded into the regions of our foreign policy. And of course they ran NATO for quite some time, and so forth. And we shall touch on these as we go along. Tavistock remains the mother of all research facilities connected with brainwashing, opinion making, and the shaping of political events through their technique known as inner directional conditioning, to which the people of the United States have been subjected since 1946. Here in the United States, they have powerful affiliations with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, Stanford Research in California, Esalen, the Wharton School, the Hudson Institute, and of course the quote, conservative, unquote, Heritage Foundation, Kissinger Associates, Duke University, Rand Institute, David Rockefeller, Georgetown University, the State of California, and many, many more institutions we think of as being wholly American. Take, for example, the power and prestige of Georgetown University, perhaps one of the top institutions of higher learning in this country. Starting in 1938, the entire structure of Georgetown was replanned and its learning formats dictated by what was known as the Tavistock Brains Trust. And that policy has continued from 1938 right up until 1993 and, of course, still continues. This has great significance for America because the United States State Department's field officers are without exception trained by Georgetown, and in parentheses I put Tavistock University. Some of its better known products are Richard Armitage and Henry Kissinger, and I think that by now we are thoroughly familiar with the deeds of these two men, deeds which have encompassed the globe and cost America dearly. One of the most ugly actions against America was planned at the Tavistock Institute in Sussex, United Kingdom. By this I don't mean that Tavistock participated in it, but that they did the profiling and psychological planning for the entire operation from start to finish. I'm referring to the bombing of the United States Marine Corps base near Beirut Airport in Lebanon, which took the lives of over 200 of our finest Marines, who never even knew what hit them. The disgusting part of this tragedy is that apparently former Secretary of State George Shultz knew in advance that a serious terrorist attack on U.S. forces in Lebanon was imminent, because he had been so informed by Israeli intelligence, the Mossad. Yet, to the best of my knowledge, Shultz never issued the right warning, which would have placed our Marines on red alert. I said this again in 1989, but only a few believed my allegation. Yet in 1990, whispers of scandalous conduct began to emerge following the disclosures in a book published by a Mossad agent who recently defected. And in that book, this agent clearly linked George Shultz to this plot as having foreknowledge of it. Everything was done to stop the book from being published, and although it seemed as if Israel and the State Department pressures were succeeding, the book was printed, and with its damning indictment is now freely available. For me, personally, it is gratifying that the several highly authoritative people who wrote to me in 1988 condemning what I had alleged about Schultz in the attack on the Marine base in Lebanon will now have to eat humble pie. Whether they will or not is a matter of conjecture, but the main thing is that it proved once again that when I give facts as facts, that is what they always turn out to be. There is also mounting evidence of increased input to our intelligence community from the Tavistock Institute. Certainly this is true of British intelligence per se. I mention this because the anniversary of the brutal murder of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas on November the 22nd, 1963 is approaching. What input did Tavistock have in this gross insult to the American nation? I am still, after 12 years of investigating into this foul murder, unable to confirm whether Tavistock did the necessary brainwashing of the people concerned in it, or whether this was solely an inside job planned by Tavistock. But let me say that many, many pointers go in the direction of the Tavistock Institute, implicating them in this foul and as yet unavenged murder of a president of the United States. This foul and vile murder remains to this day a gross insult to everything that America stands for. How can we, as a supposedly free and independent nation, allow this cancer to remain growing in our midst? The murder of President Kennedy is an insult in that we as a nation and as individuals cannot tolerate, because we were violated by a group of men operating on behalf of the secret government of America, who murdered in cold blood and in view of millions of people the highest official in the land, and got away with it. This public execution of the President of the United States was planned to have the maximum effect to send a message to the people in political power that they are not in control, that the Committee of 300 is in control, and that, as big as they may think they are once they're in the White House, they are still under the control of this insidious organization. This feeling of revulsion is the same feeling that it should evoke when people have their homes burgled. Psychologists whom I consulted on this point in preparing for this work told me that people who experience burglary or illegal entry, whether it be by government or private organizations or private people, feel that they have been physically violated. I quote what one of them said to me. One of my patients, a lady, told me that she took a long, long shower after the burglar's visit, and several others whose homes were entered illegally told me the same thing. End of the quote from the psychologist I consulted about the feelings people have when their homes have been violated. The massive cover-up of the murder of John F. Kennedy continues. I have full details of how the House Assassination Committee acted deceitfully, deceptively, dissembling and ignoring evidence, accepting X-ray photos that were patently tampered with. The list is endless. Especially vital evidence went missing. And the Kennedy death certificate, signed under curious circumstances by Admiral Berkeley. The most contemptuous of all actions taken by the government was the House Assassination Committee's, quote, investigation, unquote, of the scores of people murdered in the wake of the Kennedy assassination. No one was safe from the grasp and the reach of the Committee of 300, not even Representative Hale Boggs, who was one of the few on the committee determined to get at the truth. Hale Boggs died on his way to Alaska, and curiously, the aircraft in which he was traveling has never been found. In the end, the so-called person in charge of the investigation, which was the dirtiest travesty of justice on record, airily dismissed the thousands of proofs that witnesses who knew too much were murdered. I hope one day that Mrs. Jacqueline Hess, who headed the so-called inquiry, will be brought to justice. Her list of the murders to be investigated excluded the very first victim, Lee Harvey Oswald, and instead included false names of non-existent people, such as, quote, Edward Bernades, spelled Bernaides. Only Representative Henry Gonzalez had the courage to reply to Livingston's comments. Some people think the CIA took over and is the real government. There are a lot of folks here who would agree with that, Gonzalez said. It would appear that he knew nothing of the CIA's MH child project, also known as babysitting. Thereafter, every effort was made to discredit Gonzalez, who had a rough time at the hands of Tipsy O'Neill, the former Speaker of the House, who was so often in his cups that he earned the name Tipsy, and who fought to have the mandate of the committee under his jurisdiction. I must reluctantly leave the subject of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy by reiterating my belief that input from Tavistock in this matter did occur. After all, the CIA is reputed to be one of Tavistock's clients. I, for one, believe this, and it is only one of scores of U.S. government clients that Tavistock has, as we shall see. How did Tavistock begin his career? As I said in my 1983 work, when we think of Tavistock, we must automatically think of its founder, Major John Rawlings Rees of the British Army, who was its founder, and he set this up in 1921. There were, up until 1933, very few people outside of the intelligence establishment who had the slightest idea what Tavistock was all about. As far as America is concerned, hardly anyone in this country outside of closed government circles knew of it at all. In looking through documents on Rees, which were loaned to me and which were not to be copied, I found that he was commissioned by the Special Intelligence Service, SIS, the ultra-elite arm of British intelligence made famous by James Bond. It was two members of SIS who murdered Rudolf Hess in Spandau Prison. Of course, we know that was to keep him silent so that he would never be able to tell the true story of Churchill's involvement with the Germans and how many of the British royalty were close allies of Hitler and the Nazi Party. The Tavistock Institute performs sinister services for that group of persons that we find in every major American city. The type of services it provides goes to the local level and to the state level, and of course eventually to the nation's capital. And it concerns having law enforcement officers in the palms of their hands. They control law enforcement and use it at will to walk all over the Bill of Rights in intimidating and brutalizing innocent citizens. And if you want to see this, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm redoing this in 1993 because the master tape, which I did in 83, has become worn because of the many reproductions taken from it, then I suggest you watch a television program called Cops. The way these police in that program walk all over the rights of citizens is amazing and disgusting. And I believe this is another inner direction conditioning program meant to tell the American people that it is quite all right for police to get away with this kind of conduct. I often wonder how many innocent U.S. citizens are in prison today because of Tavistock and because they did not know their rights under the Bill of Rights, the most important protection any of us can ever have. Certainly those people intimidated by police in the program Cops do not know or did not know their Bill of Rights. Tavistock serves Interpol, David Rockefeller's private worldwide intelligence network, which is established also on government property in Washington, D.C., in open and arrogant defiance of the Constitution of the United States of America. Tavistock serves the black nobility and all those elements who strive to rob America of the fruits of the victory of 1776. Tavistock provides research and psychological profiles and planning for the Club of Rome and for most of Madison Avenue's advertising agencies. The Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the German Marshall Fund, the Cini Foundation, the Ditchley Bankers Conspiracy, the International Monetary Fund, IMF, the World Bank, Freemasonry, and even Mr. Gorbachev while he was in power, and of course now also Mr. Yeltsin and their immediate close cronies. The latest information I received, and remember I'm talking about the time that I wrote this work, which is a few years ago, is that Glasnost and Perestroika was written under the auspices and control of Tavistock, and I also have it from my source that propaganda around the Gulf Crisis was written and scored by Tavistock, the very word Gulf Crisis, which was repeated ad nauseum daily, were born in the Tavistock Institute. And it is one of their game plans, and they use these kind of words when they apply the inner directional conditioning to the people of America so that we begin to think these are our words and that we actually believe there is a crisis or there was a crisis in the Gulf. When it comes to creating public opinion based on obfuscation, direct lying, misrepresentation, dissembling of facts, there isn't a single entity in the world that can hold a candle to the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. I think it is worth quoting the following passage from my 1983 report. There are a few institutions and organizations in the publishing world who are catching on to the changes, and in the latest issue called Discovering America, in the March 1983 Esquire magazine, while they don't mention Tavistock by name, this is what they say. During the social revolutions of the 70s, most of the rituals and personal interaction and institutional life were radically altered. Naturally, these changes have affected the way we perceive the future. The economic base of America is changing, and new services and products are being offered. And it then talks about our professional lives, our leisure time, and our educational system being altered, and more importantly, altering the thinking of our children. And I want you to note that Mrs. Hillary Clinton, I call her Mrs. President, is actively engaged in a program that will turn our children in America into outright socialists. And the article goes on to say that America is being transformed as in the direction it will take in the future. Occasionally our new American section, that's what they promise in their forthcoming issues, won't seem so new since much of the new thinking has been creeping into the mainstream of American life, but until now it has gone unnoticed. End of the quote from Esquire magazine. Now let me tell you, this is the clearest confirmation I've ever had of what I told this great nation of America about inner directional conditioning practiced by the Tavistock Institute on the unsuspecting people of this great country. While Esquire didn't know who was responsible for unwanted changes that were being forced on America, or perhaps they did and just didn't dare to name Tavistock, they are not alone. Millions of Americans remain in total ignorance. Not only that, but they don't seem to care anymore. Someone has said to me, "So what? You're talking about the Tavistock Institute. So what?" So what means that these people are quite prepared to accept being conditioned and brainwashed and happily go along with that system so that eventually they won't even know who they are or what kind of a country they're living in. Let me say that every single thing mentioned in that Esquire article has come to pass. No matter how some of us have forcefully resisted these unwanted and undesirable changes, they are part of our society today. And I think particularly in utter disgust in this regard of sodomy and lesbianism and the millions of children who've been murdered through abortion. These evils are entirely due to the Tavistock Institute and its master technician, John Rawlings Rees, and its program of inner directional conditioning. I would venture to suggest that fully 98% of the American people are totally and completely unaware of how they have been manipulated and forced to accept new ideas, and I say new in quotation marks. We as a nation and as individuals have been violated, and we don't even know it. One of the specific tasks undertaken by the Tavistock Institute was to force acceptance of what is called alternate lifestyle, unquote, on the American people. Documents which were lent to me recently show how even the leaders of this vile and filthy campaign to force legal acceptance of the twin plagues of sodomy and lesbianism upon us were carefully selected by profiling on a scale that most of us would believe comes straight out of lurid science fiction paperback books. But it has not come from those areas. It has come from the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, the foremost brainwashing institute in the world. From the very beginning, even though I'm absolutely sure that she was never even aware of it, Anita Bryant was selected to spearhead the drive against sodomy. Even the very state in which the launching of gay liberation took place, Florida, was carefully selected upon population statistics involving racial origin and the numbers of so-called liberal residents. Millions of dollars were spent on this aspect alone of launching sodomy as an acceptable way of life in the community. The Tavistock plan to push lesbianism and sodomy upon the people of this nation called for the establishment of several task forces and media participation and cooperation in a series of carefully arranged and orchestrated talk shows. Among the leaders chosen for this heinous task were the Phil Donahue Show and Geraldo Rivera of the Geraldo Rivera Show. Space does not permit me to detail the minuscule planning that went into this nationwide campaign. Even I myself, as experienced as I am, was totally amazed at the extent of the homework done by Tavistock and its agencies concerning its plan to push sodomy and lesbianism down the throats of the American people. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, would you please turn your tape over for a continuation of the program? The plan also called for the eventual establishment of whole communities being targeted, and in fact whole communities across the land were individually profiled. People were screened and selected without once even knowing about it to act as opponents and proponents in the battle to make sodomy and lesbianism respectable. The participants in the talk show, seemingly chosen at random, were in fact most carefully profiled without their ever being aware of it, and certainly without their knowledge. Finally, after 2 years of preparation, doing their homework, the Tavistock sodomist lesbian onslaught was unleashed on a totally unprepared and unsuspecting America. It is like the people in France when the French Revolution burst upon them. The storm that shook this country is equivalent to what shook France during that period of its history. And that storm broke in Florida exactly as planned. And exactly as planned, Anita Bryant came forward to attack the proposals put forward by the, quote, gay community, unquote. Interestingly enough, even the word gay and the word community were chosen by Tavistock's team of expert public opinion makers. I wish I could provide the documentation to back up what I've just written, but copies of the documents loaned to me would have been impossible to make. In fact, the blueprint file for this operation has only one original. All copies are carefully indexed, and special measures inserted in the paper of those copies and the master file to prevent illegal copying. Tavistock members have to sign a special code book each and every time they want to look at these files. Nothing is allowed outside of a certain restricted area. In fact, the system is an exact duplicate of the one Tavistock put in place for the KGB. The file that I have, if attempt was made to copy it, the paper would either go black or blank. Tavistock was founded in 1921 to serve primarily as a research vehicle for British intelligence service, still the best in the world by far. Major, later Brigadier John Rawlings Rees, was commissioned by the Queen of England to run the project. In early 1945, Tavistock began to be very heavily funded by David Rockefeller in return for help to secure his private intelligence force, Interpol, which incidentally was lifted in its entirety from Reinhard Heydrich's secret intelligence operations on behalf of Hitler. During the Second World War, the Tavistock Clinic in London and the Sussex facility served as headquarters for the British Army Psychological Warfare Bureau. The significance of this is that through the best friend arrangement between Churchill and Roosevelt, Tavistock took control of the policies of the United States military through the Social Operations Executive, SOE, run by Sir William Stevenson, out of the RCA building in New York. American forces were throughout the war controlled by the British, and here we are thinking we won our independence from Britain in 1776. In documents shown to me, it became clear that the plan to deliberately cause the death of millions of German soldiers by leaving them out in the open, without food or shelter, in the height of a bitter winter, was prepared by Tavistock Institute and given to General Eisenhower, who carried it out with glee and with gusto. Eisenhower is on record as saying, "God, how I hate the Germans." Full details of this murderous, barbaric plan are described in a recent book which gives authentic details to this dastardly war crime, one of hundreds committed by Eisenhower, Churchill, Roosevelt, and Truman. These war criminals escaped justice because we won the war. Never in the annals of history has there been a bigger cover-up of war crimes and atrocities committed by the Allies than those committed against the German people. Eisenhower was a willing tool of the Committee of 300, the Olympians, throughout the Second World War, until they dumped him because he was of no use to them anymore. In a much belated piece of whining, and this I found to be quite disgusting, Eisenhower then began to warn about the power accumulated in the hands of the industrial military complex. He didn't say under the control of the Committee of 300, but that is what he meant. He didn't have the guts to tell people about the Committee of 300. And he told Americans that this industrial, military-industrial complex was a threat to America more than Germany could have been. In another of my first reports, I brought to the attention of the American public the existence of this elite group who call themselves the Committee of 300, and whose existence was very well known to General Eisenhower, later President Eisenhower. And this committee runs think tanks, national opinion research centers, national opinion polls, banks, scores of industries, and a well-knit group of social psychologists and media manipulators. The very top corporations, electronic communications, movie making, banking, insurance. As an example of their power, over 100 of the top Fortune 500 companies are run by the power conglomerate taking its orders from the Committee of 300. And these include Petro-Canada, which is very big in the fake ecology movement, Rank, Raytheon, Xerox, ITT, Eagle Star Group, and so on and so on. Tavistock is at the heart of the control mechanism exercised by the Olympians. One lady wrote and said, how could they control everybody, such a vast organization? They, meaning the Committee of 300, well, they don't do it themselves, but they have this huge, closely knit organization which provides all the methods of how people can be controlled in their thinking. And once you've got people controlled in the way they think, it's only one short step before you'll be able to convince them that slavery is for their benefit. Many of us are familiar with movies about American POWs in Korea being brainwashed. Thus we came to accept the notion that brainwashing originated in Oriental countries. In fact, it was the Tavistock Institute that taught the Chinese and Vietnamese all they know about the subject. Just as Tavistock earlier assisted the notorious Biro to set up his terror machine for the Bolshevik regime, which was imposed from the outside on the people of Russia. And we know how many millions of people died under the hands of Biro. In fact, the science of brainwashing originated in Britain, and one of its most skillful practitioners and artists and teachers was John Rawlings Rees, who trained a veritable army of scientists at Tavistock in his methods of people control. The United States, perhaps more than any other country, has felt the devastating effects of Tavistock's arts of people control, and we are still being subjected to people control by Tavistock in the year 1993 through their inner directional conditioning technique, which has had a dastardly effect upon the people and the policies of the United States. Let me say that without Tavistock, the Gulf War would never have happened. Rees had discovered the same psychotherapy techniques used to make sick people well could be turned around and used to make people sick. People who are well could be made ill. Rees had come upon this in a long series of experiments using captive British Army soldiers as guinea pigs. He had a ready-made captive audience of about 80,000 men to do his experiments on. From the beginning, Rees went on to perfect techniques that would later be used against targeted countries whom his masters, the Committee of 300, had decreed should be forcibly made to change. Examples of countries that were forced to change are legion. But first there was the United States, then Nicaragua, the Philippines, South Korea, Malaysia, India, South Africa, Rhodesia, and so on. That Rees succeeded in changing these countries can be seen in the current situation. But Rees did more than that. He also reshaped major United States institutions, both private and government, among them the Central Intelligence Agency. One of the major players in Rees's Tavistock Institute was Dr. Kurt Lewin. Dr. Lewin was born in Germany and fled the country when Hitler came to power and uncovered his plotting against the NSDP, the Nazi Party. well known to Rees during his years in Germany, and the two are said to have cooperated extensively against Hitler and his party, Lewin immediately joined Tavistock, where he was given the first major task undertaken by Rees, to propagandize America into the Second World War and to launch a similar campaign in America and Western Europe against Germany. In both of these undertakings, Rees and Lewin succeeded admirably, and we can in fact today in 1993 see the results of their work in South Africa, where the United States government, under the direction of Tavistock Institute, is about to turn one of the major areas in the world where gold and diamonds and all kinds of minerals and metals are found over to a communist organization, the African National Congress. In what has turned out to be the greatest propaganda campaign in the history of the world, Lewin whipped the American people into a totally unjustified frenzy of hatred against Germany, which was later extended to take in Japan, with tragic consequences for Japanese-American citizens and at the cost of thousands of the lives of our young American servicemen. And let me add here, ladies and gentlemen, in 1993, this is not in my original monograph, that if we only had legislators who knew the Constitution, we would have known that all of this was illegal and should never have been allowed to happen. As soon as the Committee of 300 realized that only President Saddam Hussein of Iraq stood in the way of taking complete control of the Middle East oil fields, Tavistock was given the job of destabilizing the region, which led up to the Iran-Iraq War. The war was designed with a twofold purpose: to neutralize the military might of both of these nations and undermine their national fabric. Both would henceforth be spent forces and therefore no threat to Israel, which was to take surrogate control of the Middle East oil when the time was right. And that plan, of course, is still ongoing. And here again I would add that if our legislators only knew the Constitution, they would have realized that Bush went to fight an illegal war because he did not get a constitutional declaration of war from the Congress. And here again I've seen documents which absolutely conclusively prove what I've just said. Perhaps in 5 years' time what I've said now will become common knowledge, but for now I must ask you to accept my word for it, based upon my record over the past almost two decades of being correct in about 97% of my predictions. It was a neat ploy by Tavistock to get the two most powerful nations in the Middle East to fight each other to the death and then take over the region. But Tavistock failed to take into account the true nature of the Islamic religion, and that miscalculation led to the contrived Gulf crisis, Tavistock words, which is threatening the security and stability of the United States. And I have proof that the propaganda campaign mounted by the Bush administration was developed by Tavistock Institute and then given to its agents on Madison Avenue for distribution across the United States. Not since the Second World War have we seen such a propaganda blast directed at people in this country. Both anti-Iraq and pro-American propaganda, careful analysis of key words used by Lewin to get America into the Second World War, and the words used in the blast against Iraq show that they match in 93.6% of the cases examined. A case in point: State Department personnel staffing the American Embassy in Kuwait are called hostages, although they are free to leave at any time. And exactly the same type of language was used in 1939 and 1940. In 1939, the American people were whipped into a frenzy about alleged cruelty to hostages in Germany. Now President Bush is using the same technique, every day expressing outrage at the cruelty toward American hostages in the U.S. Embassy in Kuwait. Since Bush and his bloodthirsty successor, James Baker III, have failed to push President Hussein into firing the first shots, they now depend on the hostage situation, to which such rhetoric as the American flag is still flying over the embassy in Kuwait adds fuel to the flames that will allow Bush to attack Iraq. I am predicting that a decision whether or not to launch an attack on Kuwait and Iraq will come around November the 10th, and then it will be all systems go. Now remember, this was written several years ago, ladies and gentlemen, but it proves again the accuracy of the work, because I think it was around about that date that we did attack, or announced that we were going to attack Iraq. However, we must always make allowances for unforeseen circumstances. So although American forces were given certain orders, these can always be changed, and often are changed, when circumstances make it necessary to do so. The pressures that appeared over Israel's treatment of the Palestinians in the occupied territories of Gaza and the West Bank have become very strong, and my sources told me that President Bush never anticipated that Arab countries in his new alliance would be strong enough to go along with him. But here again, he miscalculated insofar as a number of countries in the Islamic world who did not go along with him. I'm told that there is a pressure group within the UN, led by France, that has been demanding that the Geneva Human Rights Convention be invoked against Israel. And if this pressure on Israel should succeed, and my source said it had much support in the Security Council, except from UN, the United States and Britain, then the United Nations would send its own delegation to Israel, which is a signatory to that declaration, the Geneva Human Rights Convention, to carry out an on-the-spot survey of Palestinian complaints. We now know, since these lines were written, that in fact Israel did block a United Nations inspection team from coming out there to look at the Palestinian complaints. And they were only able to do this, of course, because of United Nations, of U.S. veto powers in the Security Council. But of real concern to Americans, in addition to Middle East problems, must be the billions of our tax dollars pumped into Tavistock activities by the United States government. I will give full details of this in the upcoming work on the Committee of 300, and I only wish I could get that work into the hands of millions of Americans, and blow the scandal wide open. Our tax dollars have poured into Tavistock-created institutions like National Training Laboratories, Harvard Psychological Clinics, Wharton School, Stanford, RAND, MIT, National Institute of Mental Health, Georgetown University, Esalen, Center for Advanced Studies in Behavioral Sciences, Institute for Social Research, and scores of others whom I mentioned in my earlier work on the mother of all think tanks, the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. And since this work was written, my book, The Story of the Committee of 300, has been published, and it contains a full list of all of the institutions receiving huge amounts of money from the United States government at the behest of the Tavistock Institute. The task of setting up these centers of Tavistock influence in the heart of America was given to a pro-Zionist refugee from Germany, Kurt Lewin, who I have mentioned earlier. Lewin's name would probably not be recognized by more than a couple of hundred people in this country, yet this man has done more to destroy and undermine the institutions and the laws upon which the Republic of the United States of America rests, and he has done more to unravel the warp and woof of the fabric which makes this nation hang together than a dozen Stalins or Hitlers could ever have hoped to do. Pretty heavy stuff that, but believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it is absolutely true. I say and I can prove that this man Kurt Lewin did far more damage to America than ever Hitler or Stalin could have done. Just how serious this damage is can be measured by the fact that the U.S. Air Force is controlled by Tavistock through the RAND Corporation. It was a Tavistock RAND position paper that led to the disastrous cancellation of the SR-71 Blackbird spy plane program. This is fact, not fiction, and it is more than borne out when we analyze the debates on this vital subject in the Congressional Records. I have probably the finest private collection of Congressional Records in the country, and I read them. How many people read the Congressional Record? If you want to get an education on the Constitution, read the Congressional Records. We will be amazed to find that the most vociferous opposition to continuing the SR-71 program came from the top Air Force brass in the Pentagon. It was against this group that Senator John Glenn expressed intense bitterness. I doubt very much whether Senator Glenn realized that his opposition to Blackbird came from a far higher source than the Pentagon. How did Reese's successful techniques work so well? And work they did, ladies and gentlemen. Reese predicted, and that he predicted this, and he said that my mass brainwashing experiments will succeed. In fact, Reese perfected his mass brainwashing experiments through stress tests or psychological shocks, also known as stressful events. The Reese theory simply proved and amply proved that if entire populations could be subjected to stress tests, then it would be possible first to work out in advance what the mass population responses would be to given stress events. This is known as inner directional conditioning and also as profiling, and it applies to individual persons who are subjected to the technique. Thus were crafted the tools at the Tavistock Institute, which were to be used to literally drive whole societies and areas mad, as we have seen, and it is at the bottom of all so-called changing times, new ideas, which is nothing but skillful propaganda to make us believe that such changes are occurring quite naturally as a matter of social progression, while skillfully concealing the fact that these changes have been carefully crafted in advance and forced upon us through application of the sinister techniques which Reese developed and perfected. It seems that we do not stop to think that for every effect there must be a cause. Instead, we blithely accept the changing times theme as witnessed in the social, religious, political, economic, and governmental style changes. We were conditioned in advance to accept. These changes are not natural. They are the fruits of Tavistock's long war against the United States, which began in 1921 and was applied with great intensity in 1946 and is still ongoing. One of the major tasks facing us today is how to spread information of the kind I'm giving you here across the length and breadth of the United States, so that Americans will rise up and attack the insidious attempt to rob us of the fruits of the victory of the American Revolution of 1776. How successful Reese has been can be measured by the test carried out on a large-scale group of people on another different conspiracy-related subject. It turned out that 97.6% of those questioned utterly rejected the idea that an overall conspiracy exists. How much less, then, would they believe that Tavistock has, for the past 45 years, been sending an army of invisible shock troops into every hamlet, village, town, and city in the United States, whose task it is to tamper with the population by modifying their collective behavior and their collective thoughts. The Rees Invisible Army is made up of real professionals who know their job. They are in universities, government advisory boards, local government administrations, the church, school boards, town councils. The bottom line of their task was enunciated by Rees back in 1954, and I quote, "Their job is to apply the advanced techniques of psychological warfare as we know them to groups that will grow ever larger so that the whole population may be more easily controlled. In a world driven completely mad, groups of Tavistock-trained psychologists linked to each other, capable of influencing the political and governmental fields, must be the arbiters, the power cabal." End of quote. Let that sink in, ladies and gentlemen, and step back and consider exactly what it means. One such member of the Invisible Army was Ronald Lippert, whose specialty is tinkering with the minds of children. Another member was Dr. Fred Emery, who was on the board of President Johnson's Kerner Commission. Emery was a specialist at what Tavistock calls social environmental turbulence. And I'll repeat that. Social environmental turbulence, the bottom line of which is that when a whole population group is subjected to social crises, it breaks down into synoptic idealism and finally fragments. That is to say, it just gives up trying to cope with the problem or problems. This happened in the case of drugs, rock and roll music, free sex, pornography, lesbianism, and homosexuality, and now abortion. When this happens in a community, it is powerless to cope with a broken-down justice system, such as we have in the U.S. today, where we find 33% of American Negroes under constraint in the justice system. That is to say, they are either in prison, on parole, or on probation. No nation can survive such shock treatment without breaking up. It happened to Rome, it happened to Greece, and now it is happening to the United States. Members of the Invisible Army are to be found entrenched in Congress, the military, and indeed in every government office in the land. I believe, after studying the government of the state of California, that California has the largest contingent of invisible soldiers from Tavistock, judging from how close California has come to being a socialist state, almost a police state. I believe that California will be used as a role model for the rest of America. What can be done about the grip Tavistock has upon the institutions in America and what it has upon us and our military brass? Our problem is to convince the broad mass of American people as to what is happening, and I hope that this message will go a long way towards doing that. Thank you for listening.